In the 40s and 50s, was communism seen by ordinary party activists as a sort of practical political system, or was it more than that? Was there an element of religious faith in it almost?
I think basically that was seen as a system, because when you study Lenin's writings and Marx and all that stuff, it was supposed to become a new type of a society. It was supposed to be a productive society, to be sort of, as they said, better. They aspired to produce better life for people, etc. So it was society where the religion was certainly, I mean, the religion of ideology, important part. But, as I say, it was supposed to be a reasonable system.
To what extent was the model of politics and economics adopted by Eastern European regimes in the 40s and 50s the result of their own thinking and ideas, or was it a slavish imitation of the Soviet model?
I think in the very beginning, it sort of was a mixture. They tried to solve the problems that were before them in accordance with what was prescribed by Lenin, Marx, and what was going on in the Soviet Union. And at the same time, every country was facing a special situation, like Czechs were in a different situation, Poles were a different situation, Hungarians. So in the very beginning, there was a mixture. Only in the later years, toward the end of Stalin, that became sort of a monopolized, one view prevailed, and everything was supposed to be alike.
To what extent was that directly imposed by the Soviet Union?
Well, it's obvious that it was imposed by Stalin. There is no secret about it, and those who didn't march in step surely paid the price. So, I mean, the history attests to that clearly.
What is the essence of a totalitarian system? What distinguishes it from a simple dictatorship?
Probably that in a communist-type system, at least in the very beginning, the idea was everything will be controlled by the state and the party, economy, culture, every aspect of life, so it was, that is called totalitarianism. Unlike, for example, in dictatorship, where you can have a private economy, people with influence in different spheres, and then somewhere it's umbrella of dictatorship. In communist countries, everything was supposed to be directed.
To what extent also is a totalitarian system characterized by the party's, originally at least, by the party's demand that you believed in it, you actually believed in it, you participated in it?
Oh, I think in the very beginning, the party had an idea that those true believers will be the members of the party, and the party was supposed to be the group of those best, the most persuaded in the rightness of communism, etc. So the party was sort of like a mobilizing force. Then later, definitely, party, and especially now, becomes a group of people with very, very different views, people who come to the party because they understand that there is only one party. And if you want to be effective, you just enter there for pragmatic reasons. So it's a different situation now. But in the very beginning, as I say, it was supposed to be clear-cut monopoly on idea inside the party.
In the very beginning, too, were people outside the party, the mass of people, could you give some examples of the extent to which they were involved, or the party tried to involve them actively in manifesting their support for the new society?
Well, it's obvious that in the very beginning, especially in the very beginning, the party liked people going to the streets and to manifest their support on, May Day or whatever. The people were cheering and saying sort of like, look, we are happy, we really support this new beginning, the new dawn, and we are all sort of mobilized for fulfilling what the party thinks is right. So it was absolutely one of the essential parts of the system to have people manifesting the support.
In communist parties, where is policy making and control located, and how concentrated, how centralized is that?
Definitely that the control is in the highest ranks of the party. It means in the Politburo, the Central Committee, then in the regional party committees. And nevertheless, one has to take it historically as well. While in the past, Politburo, the Central Committee, was very powerful, in the later years, the regional secretaries acquired a lot of power, especially under Brezhnev in the Soviet Union, and during those years in many Eastern European countries. It was rather logical because, you know, the Central Committee and the Politburo were not able always to arrange things to the satisfaction of everybody, and some regions were unhappy, so that to share the blame, the party, Central Committee, needed to share slightly more the power. So, you know, these things are developing. It's not like, you know, it is forever.
But what sort of numbers are we talking about, even in this more devolved system? How many people are actually making the key decisions in communist parties?
The very key decisions formally are made by Politburo. Central Committee more or less acquires with what was decided by the Politburo. And the other echelons of the party are supposed to go on. But again, this is theory. In many ways, the decisions, when they go down, are watered down and things are changed. So what the problem with the communism today, essentially, in many ways, is that what Politburo decides, everybody agrees with, but it is not implemented in many ways. So this is how we should look at things today.
What is the function of the ordinary party member, both in the past and the present?
Originally, as originally conceived by Lenin, an ordinary party member was supposed to be rather influential. You know, the thing is, that is sometimes forgotten, the party statutes, when you take the ones that were adopted at the center, at the party congress of the Soviet Union last year in February, or party statutes in other countries, the letter of those statutes permits every party member can criticize anybody in the party, including the Secretary General, and nobody can punish anybody for criticism, because whoever would try to punish somebody for criticism can be punished himself. Wonderful. The problem with that is that there are no checks and balances. So the letter is nice, and the original idea was sort of nice, that you are party member, so you participate, you are sort of an elite. As it turned out, the lower you are in the party, the lesser influence you have, and if you try to just say that here are the statutes, I can do that, simply it comes out to nothing.
Are the ordinary party members used usually in communist parties merely as sources of information and also as transmission bells to tell, to convey party policies to the mass?
Yeah, in many respects, again, this was a theory. Here we have a lot of party members in different areas of economic activity in different regions of the party is very well informed. The information comes up, and the influence from Central Committee and from the Politburo comes down through the party members. But as things in many areas and in many ways don't work as they should, so the party members down are exposed to the criticism of their fellow co-workers, of fellow citizens. And they are, on the one hand, the party members. On the other hand, they are members of the collective, and they feel the heat. So they are not ready to fight for party line if they understand that the party line is counterproductive or actually is wrong, and they will fight their co-workers. I mean, that is not the case nowadays. What turns out rather often is that in many respects, these people down simply say, look, you upstairs, you better do something because we feel the heat and we are not willing, you know, to do it anymore. So the party nowadays is not so disciplined in many countries and in many ways than it used to be, because, as I say, because of growing problems, because of different pressures. And, you know, as I say, the people are not willing to fight at every corner for everything that is decided somewhere upstairs.
Does it worry the Central Committee and the Politburo if lots of ordinary party members say, hey, these policies are going to cause real problems?
It worries them. And in different countries, they approach the situation differently. In some countries, where still the central controls is firm, like in Romania and some other countries, what they prefer is not to hear about it. So they don't like when the regional secretary informs the leadership upstairs that, you know, the situation is bad, and our ordinary party members even say that it is bad. They say, prefer that it is covered up so that everybody has like clear conscience and the situation. You know, this produces sort of a divided personalities. People behave differently, though they know that there are problems. In some other countries, like in Poland, in Hungary, and I think that it will come in Czechoslovakia and even in GDR later, In many ways, it's difficult not to learn, even upstairs, that some party members are nervous of becoming increasingly discontent themselves with the situation. So the feedback becomes stronger. The leadership is more nervous, and that's in many ways, like in Poland, becomes, in a way, more responsive to the pressures from downstairs. In some countries, like, for example, in Romania, the leadership still doesn't want to know, probably, what's going on down in economy, down in the regions. So they prefer when the regional secretaries bring up the good news and the party leadership lives happy and thinks how wisely they are running the country. In other areas, in other countries, like in Poland and in Hungary, and I think increasingly in Czechoslovakia and probably in GDR even, we are witnessing a trend when the ordinary party members were exposed to some problems, some pressures in factories, in their regions, in their places where they live. They are not willing to tolerate those pressures and take the heat upon themselves. They want that it is reported upstairs. And the Central Committee learns, the Politburo learns. So the feedback is growing and it changes the whole game, so to say.
How does the Leninist Party relate to the state structure, to government in these countries?
I would essentially look at it from the point of view that Leninist Party is supposed to be the main guarantor of the policy line. It brings the policy to the state apparatus and it is supposed to guarantee that it will be implemented. But in many ways it is the government that is supposed to take care of the things, to put things in a workable way. But when things work well, everything is okay with the party because the party takes the pride in the success. When things don't work, it is the government that is blamed. When there is a big difference between the words and the deeds, the government, again, is not willing to take all the blame for itself. So it says, look, we probably would do better if the party was not interfering so often. So as the problems grow in the communist countries, in the Soviet Union, in Eastern Europe, we see more and more tension between party and government. So who is to take blame? Who is to, you know, implement the policy?
How does the party actually parallel the organization of the government?
Essentially, it is like a shadow government on every level, on every important step. You have a party, you have an economic, governmental sphere. So they are present everywhere. But again, during the years, it evolved. The rules sometimes are blurred because in some areas you have a governmental force relatively strong and established, especially if you have a strong personality leading, and that personality is at the same time the member of some party committee, regional party committee, or like prime minister is member of Politburo. He can become a very strong voice. In some other countries, like in Romania, I mean, you have a dictator and all the other people are essentially irrelevant. So this is a process, and the communism is evolving in that respect. And I would even say that probably there is a competition now between the party and government. And it, like in China, we already are witnessing a situation where the government says, okay, we will produce results, but please don't interfere on every step. And the party is somehow realizing that there is a merit in that.
Can I ask you to give a more mechanistic description of this and give me an example of how the Central Committee Secretariat, for example, will parallel the government organization in particular area?
Oh, okay, let's start with the Politburo. The Prime Minister is the member of the Politburo. So whatever the policy of the Communist Party, and that is decided in the Politburo, that is then agreed upon in the Central Committee. So the Politburo informs the Prime Minister that this is the policy, here you are, the member of Politburo, and you should follow the line. So he comes to the government, says that is the policy line, and I'm entrusted with that, and you go with me. Then it is actually on every other level. If you are in a ministry, whatever, probably of heavy industry or what, then in the Central Committee you have a department that is responsible for your area. So there is the head of the department or the secretary of the Central Committee. who informs the minister that is the party line. We are sort of like supervising or leading you, and you do the thing. And it is in a way in factories, in the regions. You have a regional secretary who gets the party line through his apparatus, and then he just is supposed to lead all these chiefs of factories that they perform in a unified way. But as I have said before, as things get more difficult, as things diversified, as life becomes more diversified, it is increasingly more difficult to have it somehow directed from the center, and the directors of different regions, the directors of ministers, etc., are more reluctant to take the orders because they sometimes clash with what they are supposed to produce.
How omnipresent is the party throughout society, in organizations, factories?
It is omnipresent, but again, everywhere, in every factory, you have a party committee that is very influential. But always you have the director of the factory who is member of that party committee. And that is, during the years, situation evolved in such a way that there is a forceful director, and he knows how to manipulate people, how to, you know, sometimes bribe, offering certain advantages. So he may essentially become at a par with the party committee, or some of these directors get ahead. So the party committee essentially sanctions what they want to do. This is how the situation is, as I say, evolving in many countries, not in each one of them. But it's sort of fight of power that becomes more diversified, more multi-layer. And while the party is omnipresent, it's not necessarily omnipowerful.
What is the nomenclatura, and what role does it play in the communist system?
Nomenclatura is definitely one of the key elements of communist system. These are the people that defend the system, upon whom the system stands, and they are the ones who essentially are supposed to implement the policies, supervise the implementation. They are rewarded for that. But how?
But who are they exactly? Can you give us a definition of
that? Oh, surely. The nomenclatura essentially are the people who are put into positions by the high party committees. Politburo put certain people into positions. Central committee put regional party committees. So all the people who are put into important positions by the leading party organs become the nomenclatura. They are, as I say, those the skeleton of the system. What becomes new again as the system evolves? In the past, nomenclatura was clearly rewarded. The rewards were relatively high. The rules were relatively clear. So everything worked okay. But now, as the system faces more and more problems, nomenclatura faces more and more pressures from different parts of society. And if the problems are not faced by the very top of the party leadership of the government, then the people down become restless, become more criticized more. So the nomenclatura becomes somehow squeezed between the people and between those who put them into the positions. And sometimes simply the nomenclatura is not, lower nomenclatura, is not always willing to take all the heat, so tries to position itself in such a way where it could stay and be nomenclatura without, you know, paying the price for the mistakes. It becomes less obedient to the top. That's why the top party leadership has to be more responsive to lower levels of nomenclatura. And that's why, summing up, we see that in a way, communist societies become sort of more fluid.
What role does the secret police and army play in Leninist party rule now in communist Europe?
It differs definitely from country to country. As we have recently witnessed in Romania, there is no hesitation at the least occasion to put police and soldiers into the streets to face the workers. In some other countries, it's not so easy. I don't want to say that the army or the police is not ready to put things back in order. What is new here is that every regional party secretary or even high position people know, once you have workers in the streets in any part of your country, it means that with all the likelihood, at least the regional party secretary will be fired. So what now is the situation that the people try to prevent things reaching the point where you have to have soldiers in the streets. And in a way, and that is new, that the regional party secretaries simply will even not implement certain orders from the Central Committee or Politburo if they are afraid that it will provoke the unrest of the workers.